It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this penultimate day of June. I love saying penultimate. I heard a nurse, what was the other word I heard today? I was, it'll come to me. I heard it on National Petroleum Radio, and I was like, ooh, that's good. That's suitable for Mr. Twain's mantelpiece. It's the penultimate day of June. It's the 29th day of June. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live. Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. All time zones in between and the great globe round. And whatever time it is when you're listening to the podcast, which we're all really glad you do. Thank you. Thank you for downloading the podcast. And if you feel like it, please follow it, like it, subscribe to it, whatever they call it there. Press the heart button at TuneIn Radio. Leave a comment for the algorithms. And, tell your friends and neighbors, because this is a conversation and has been a conversation unlike any others for going on two decades. Hi, I'm Robin. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and, well, we got handed some thorns today by our most puissant Dread Sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties, and that will probably be the front end of the program, or perhaps the biggest part of the program. It's still hazy as hell. It's not as bad here as it is, say, where Micah is in Michigan. Her AQI 219. Mine right now from the Canadian forest fires is 103. You cannot see Hawk's Nest from the New River Gorge Bridge. That probably doesn't mean much to many people, but it's surprising because it's about, as the crow flies, a couple of miles probably, and you can see one from the other. But not now. Oh, no, not now. And one of the things I noticed, and I'm getting a little ahead of myself. One of the things I've noticed is that the smoke is screwing with the wildlife. I have seen more dead deer on the side of the road in the last two or three days than I've ever seen at this time of year before. And I surmise, this is my theory, that when the woods and the forests get really, really smoky, critters like deer tend to think, and bears, and everything else, tend to think that something's on fire somewhere, so they go somewhere else, or, head downhill or whatever. And so I'm seeing them just hanging out. I saw a little button buck last night or yesterday evening hanging out by the side of the road, and I'm like, Harvey, Get back in the woods. You're just a button buck right now. It's too early for you. The dudes in the camo will be chasing you in November. Come on now. Get. What? Oh, Steve in New York. Is it Friday in the Horniverse? No, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. The website has the link for Friday on the front porch. Well, you know, maybe Brother Deacon Ace is just getting ahead of things there. But this has got to be hell on the wildlife. No way it's not. But every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. And this program is no different. And so, on the 29th of the month, we have no subscribers because of how PayPal works. But the fundraising goal stands from last night at $2,125. That's what it's going to take to close the month of June. It's probably a lost cause that we will finish June fully funded because we didn't finish May fully funded. But every effort is appreciated. Every dollar, every dime is appreciated. Thank you. Thank you so much. And hopefully we'll get closer than this to being fully funded, because that's like a week and a half unfunded. That's brutal. Oh, and I didn't say hi to the chat room. My bad. If you pop by the aforementioned Mary Wacky's Ainy real-time madcap multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers, and that's Anatole and Micah and Squeaky and Theo, and all capably moderated by Horn chief mathematician and chief agronomist and bud trimmer emeritus, Roger in Oregon. Also master canner and maker of fantastic sauerkraut and pickled peppers. Yum. Pop on by. A good time's being had by all. Anyway, let's get into things. By the way, Ralph says, "Come on, everyone! Don't make me sick, Lassie and Kayla on y'all." Oh, you don't want that. It's just bad, scary stuff. It truly is. Thank you, Ralph. Well, being as how it is, the penultimate day of June, 2023. We got a couple more Supreme Court decisions today. And I don't think I could possibly be more disgusted than I am. This is how they play, this is how this court plays the month of June. They save the really odious shit for last. And yet there's more potentially odious garbage to come. Tomorrow, for instance. But today, they did their dirty business. Today, they made sure, they made absolutely certain that our educational opportunities, and I'm upset about this, I'm upset about this on the level of the upset I was upset a year ago with Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health. Today, Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Fappy Thomas, among others, made sure that it is far less likely that there will ever be another... I mean, is there an upside to the affirmative action decision? Well, it's a lot less likely there will ever be another Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Fappy Thomas. And that's perfectly, you know, that tracks with who he is. He is the biggest, most prominent, self-hating black man in America today. He is a scourge upon young black scholars all over this country. I'm trying not to just come unglued and start screaming. There were two decisions today. The affirmative action one came first. And then there was also the Christian who didn't want to work on Sundays. We'll get to both. We will. Jesus. You know, this court has not always been this bad. On June the 29th, 1972, the Supreme Court of the United States held that the death penalty, as it was then being used by the several states, was unconstitutional. And we had 4 years, about 4 years, of not murdering people in the name of the state. The ultimate in retributive justice. Or just not even justice, retributive punishment. I got it right for 4 years, but the bloodlust was too strong. And so, they brought it back because places like Texas and Florida and Alabama were terribly, terribly, terribly sad. On a more procedural note, the conventional wisdom is that the Supreme Court of the United States is above the fray, that they can't be bothered with the day-to-day fascinations of the lumpen proletariat, and that they're not just another reality TV show that we watch. with no cameras. But that's a lie. And the lie is borne out by the way in which they release cases. How every term ends in a cliffhanger of sorts, as we wait breathlessly to see what awful vicissitudes they will heap upon us as the term closes and people like Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Fappy Thomas head off on maybe some $500,000 vacation with his buddy Har Har and Lee Lee. And Jin Jin. They do it for the numbers. They do it for the ratings. They do it to have all eyes on them because they, by God, are the supreme damn court. So there they were today. What's that, John, in Central PA? Subject line, the Roberts Court, that's three Ks. I said it before, and I'll say it again. Every Democrat running for public office must run on a plan to reform the court. I agree wholeheartedly, John. Today, a precedent as old as I am fell. Affirmative action. And there they were. Brett Kavanaugh. Ann's boy Neil Gorsuch. The Handmaid. Sammy Bad Breath Alito. Old Balls and Strikes John Roberts. And yeah, the most self-loathing black man in America, Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Fappy Thomas. Ever since the story hit, I've been for some reason or another, I was thinking about information in the documentary about Fappy. And I still haven't seen it. I want to. But I heard an interview about it on Fresh Air. And the person, the documentarian, was describing how when he went to Yale Law School, Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Fappy Thomas felt isolated, left out, and how he attributed that to the fact that he felt like his fellow students felt like he got in because he wasn't really qualified to get in, but he got in because he was black. He would not have gotten in if he did not meet the standards of Yale Law School. Plain and simple. But it did create space for him to exist in, and all day long I've sort of wondered, I wonder if maybe Fappy Thomas felt that way. You know, the other Yaleys didn't let him play in their little reindeer games. And he felt that. I wonder if maybe that's just because he was a dick. He was a dick then. He's been a dick all his miserable dick life, and he's a dick now. Occam's razor suggests that the simplest answer is most often the correct one. And in order for it to be a matter of him being left out because all the little white folks going to law school thought that he wasn't really qualified because he was black, and they just let him in because he was black, and that's how they just let him in, and they stole his dignity by admitting him to Yale. That's a lot of flaming barbed wire hoops to jump through, when instead it's probably more likely that the other Yaleys just didn't like him because he was a 200-proof asshole. And frankly, every opinion he has ever authored, every word he has ever uttered from the bench of the Supreme Court, backs that up. He's an asshole. He's a giant prostate. He's a gallbladder. Useless. He's wisdom teeth. He's tits on a bull. Or a boar hog. He's just a shitty, miserable, awful human being, or attempt at one. That's all. That's all. And so as of today, just like as of a year and a week ago, more than half of the people in this country, people capable of becoming pregnant, were reduced to a classless, rightless status relative to their own bodies. And that was deemed a great day for America by the Republican Party, who then found out that the vast majority of Americans didn't agree with them, and they spent the rest of the year running away from it. And then by November of 2022, found out the hard way that what they had planned on being a red wave, a tsunami of right-wing victories in the Congress, turned out to a matter of, well, it's a little spotting. And I hope, although I don't hold out much of it, I hope that this works out the same way for them. Old Balls and Strikes John Roberts fell back into his nasty ways from back when he gutted the pre-clearance portion of the Civil Rights Act when he said, "Oh, there's no racism in America anymore." And in that holding, unleashed a racist tide of voter suppression across this entire country. It was 6-3 in the University of North Carolina case. It was 6-2 in the Harvard case. Because since it was Harvard, Ketanji Brown Jackson, being an ethical justice, recused herself. And Old Balls and Strikes took it upon himself to write the opinion. He said,
The Harvard and UNC admissions programs cannot be reconciled with the guarantees of the Equal Protection Clause. Both programs lack sufficiently focused and measurable objectives warranting the use of race, unavoidably employ race in a negative manner, involve racial stereotyping, and lack meaningful endpoints. We have never permitted admissions programs to work in that way, and we will not do so today.
This isn't just going to impact black folks generally. It is, I mean, it is going to impact black folks generally. It will more than likely have a particularly devastating impact on black women. Before affirmative action policies were put in place, just as a for instance, women who were lawyers were about 3% of the lawyers in America. Now it's up in the 30%. In that range. But you might recall, this comes as no surprise. Because you might recall Fat Dead Tony Scalia, or was it Fappy Thomas, who said that, well, you know, if affirmative action won't get them into Harvard and Yale, or the University of North Carolina, well, they can just go to some shitty community college. They'll probably be better off there anyway. Ralph sent me a meme from over at Democratic Underground. Radical SCOTUS 6 strikes down decades-old precedent of college affirmative action. There's Brat saying, good news, racism's over in America. Somebody tell Boof and Queef. I added that part. Ann's boy Neil replies, which means students can now be admitted on merit alone. Huzzah. And the handmaid says, and if most of them happen to be white, and Sammy Bad Breath says, why, that's just pure coincidence. That's just pure coincidence. Balls and Strikes says, we based our decisions on this classic conservative principle, as enunciated by Fappy, who says, woohoo, I got mine. Fuck all, y'all. And it could not possibly be more true. Subject line, Supreme with Matt in San Francisco says, we must look out for the poor, poor put upon Chads and Devons of the world. I just love how I've heard some of the conservatives speaking today about how they want to live in a colorblind world. This decision brings us closer to that ideal. What the actual fuck? I could say more, but a sling of swear words won't add a ton to my argument. No, but Matt, sometimes it's satisfying. And swear away if you want to, because if anybody in the United States deserves to be sworn at and screamed at right in their faces, nose to nose, it's those six pricks on the Supreme Court of the United States.
Students must be viewed as an individual.
Pauls and Strikes said,
not on the basis of race. Many universities have for too long done just the opposite, and in doing so they have concluded wrongly that the touchstone of an individual's identity is not challenges bested, skills built, or lessons learned, but the color of their skin. Our constitutional history does not tolerate that choice.
Oh, doesn't it? I mean, y'all are all originalists. Put yourself in your little originalist time machine and go back to 1787 and ask those white wealthy men sitting around in convention assembled in Philadelphia what they felt about challenges bested, skills built, or lessons learned relative to the color of certain people's skin. If there is anything to be learned out of this noxious, odious, godforsaken cesspit of a decision, it is that originalism is the most gigantic jurisprudential fraud perpetrated upon the American people since, oh, I don't know, privity of contract. Or how about separate but equal? Everybody pretty much knew this is how it was going to play out. But at least Sonia Sotomayor dissenting wasn't brooking any of the most puissant dread sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesty's utter and absolute bullshit. She said, today this court stands in the way and rolls back decades of precedent and momentous progress. It holds that race can no longer be used in a limited way in college admissions to achieve such critical benefits. In so holding, the court cements a superficial rule of colorblindness as a constitutional principle in an endemically segregated society where race has always mattered and continues to matter. And of course, every Republican, maggot and otherwise, are jumping up and down and saying things like,
See, I told you there was reverse racism. I told you. And the Supreme Court dumbfounded a bunch of white guys and one self-hating black man and one handmaid found, they know there's reverse racism. The black people have to get their boots off of, get the black man off our backs.
And Sonia Sotomayor, who along with Elena Kagan and Ketanji Brown Jackson have more brains in their toenail clippings than the entirety of that godforsaken majority, went on and said that what they did subverts the constitutional guarantee of equal protection by further entrenching racial inequality in education, the very foundation of our democratic government and pluralistic society. But then, in the University of North Carolina case, Ketanji Brown Jackson wrote that dissent. And I'll bet when his fingers touched the pages, Fappy Thomas's fingers got burnt. She accused the most puissant dread sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties of surging to vindicate equality, but Don Quixote style, pitifully perceiving itself as the sole vanguard of legal high ground when in reality its perspective is not constitutionally compelled. Ooh. Simply put, the race-blind admission stance the court mandates from this day forward is unmoored from critical real-life circumstances. Thus, the court's meddling not only arrests the noble generational project that America's universities are attempting, it also launches, in effect, a dismally misinformed sociological experiment.
And Fappy Thomas wasn't satisfied to just join in with the other five fascists. He had to write his own concurrence. And so, basically, it wound up being a snipe fest between, not so much. Now, It was Ketanji Brown Jackson schooling Fappy Thomas, and Fappy Thomas answering back,
I'm rubber, you're glue, what bounces off me sticks to you.
And of course, he wrote at length. He actually had the unmitigated gall to write,
even in the segregated South where I grew up, individuals were not the sum of their skin color.
Really? You mean the individuals that couldn't go to the white schools, Fappy? I think they were the sum of their skin color in that instance. People who wanted to eat dinner in a restaurant but had to go around back, I'm pretty sure they were the sum of their skin color in the eyes of those people.
Well, I am painfully aware of the social and economic ravages which have befallen my race and all who suffer discrimination.
His race.
I hold out enduring hope that this country will live up to its principles so clearly enunciated in the Declaration of Independence,
written, drafted in the main by a slave owner,
and the Constitution of the United States, also
dreamed up mostly by a slave owner,
that all men are created equal, are equal citizens, and must be treated equally before the law.
You'll notice he said men. He is an originalist. And he read the fucking thing from the bench. And Ketanji Brown Jackson just sat stone-faced, staring straight ahead. She did not read her own dissent. I wish she would have. Because, among other things, she said that the majority, Fappy included, have a let-them-eat-cake obliviousness, and announced a color blindness for all by legal fiat. Bunch of law schools and medical schools and MBA program's about to get a lot whiter, y'all. And but the best part was that Ketanji Brown Jackson poked Fappy right in the eye. Called him out by name. She said he has an obsession with race consciousness that far outstrips my or UNC's holistic understanding that race can be a factor that affects applicants' unique life experiences. Justice Thomas ignites too many more straw men to list or fully extinguish here. The takeaway is that those who demand that no one think about race, a classic pink elephant paradox, you know, don't think about a pink elephant. And now we're all thinking about a pink elephant. Refuse to see, much less solve for, the elephant in the room, the race-linked disparities that continue to impede achievement of our great nation's full potential. And you have to remember that the cases that got this going were started by, you know, basically Brad and Melissa shitheads. White kids who couldn't get into their chosen school because they said, there's a black person who's sitting where I ought to be. Oh, shut up and go to community college, you little fucks. Ketanji Brown Jackson went on to say that the Brad and Melissa shithead whining about how unfair things are, blinks both history and reality in ways too numerous to count. But the response is simple. Our country has never been colorblind. Not being, well, atne ute aitbre, if you know what one what I mean, may. Fappy had to snark back.
As she sees things, we are all inexorably trapped in a fundamentally racist society with the original sin of slavery and the historical subjugation of black Americans still determining our lives today. Well, they don't determine my life. I take $500,000 bribe vacations to Indonesia with my buddy Har Har and Lee Lee and my insurrectionist wife Jin Jin. Where's the racism?
Because this case wasn't nearly, I honest to God, I think there was some white paternalism and one case of maternalism on this majority. They wanted to make their friend Fappy stop feeling so sad about his blackness. Because Fappy's written a memoir. It's called My Grandfather's Son.
And he said that paternalistic whites at Yale tricked him by recruiting a black student like him. I learned the hard way that a law degree from Yale meant one thing for white graduates and another for blacks, no matter how much anyone denied it. As a symbol of my disillusionment, I peeled a 15-cent price sticker off a package of cigars and stuck it on the frame of my law degree to remind myself of the mistake I'd made by going to Yale.
Well, Fappy, you wouldn't be sitting on that court right now if you hadn't gone to Yale. And the manifest hubris involved to sit on the bench of the highest court in the United States of America. Well, you know what? Maybe a guy with a 15-cent law degree shouldn't be on the Supreme Court of the United States. Because the entire length and breadth of Fappy Thomas's time on the court has not been nothing but one long revenge tour. And then he said,
I believe blacks can achieve in every avenue of American life without the meddling of university administrators.
So step down from the court, Fappy. You obviously don't belong there. Oh, no, no. Oh, no. That's for everybody else, not him. He's got his. Fuck y'all. He is 200 proof igum foo. It's just every marginalized group will have its self-hating members, its bootlickers, its pick-me's, and in Republican circles, the only goal of Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Fappy Thomas has been to be seen by Whitey as one of the good ones. And this is going to have ramifications. You know, there are kids who are unborn and undreamt of, whose power and potential and future has been stolen from them by this gang of privileged, racist white people and their one bootlicker. Kim in New York. Hi, Robin. Hi, Kim. Leopards don't change their spots, nor skunks their stripes, Kim. Well, it takes a Supreme Court ruling against affirmative action to unmask the never-Trumpers. George Conway's cause celeb seems to be ballyhooing today's ruling on Twitter. He may be a vociferous anti-Trumper, but he's still a rabid anti-social justice, anti-equal access schmuck like the rest of his fellow conservative Republicans. Vile. This has been going on for eons, y'all. And if and that, you know, that's one of the recurring themes. It is important that we bear in mind that this shit did not start with Donald Trump. It also didn't start with George W. Bush. No, hell no. By 1964, Richard Hofstadter had already identified it and named it the paranoid style in American politics. It remains relevant to this day. Remember, Herbert Hoover, as president, refused the idea of aid to suffering American farmers because that was not the business of the United States. It was a libertarian wonderland of the free market. Of course, that's the same Herbert Hoover who, during the Great Mississippi Flood, chained black men together along a failing levee in order to have them shore up the levee with sandbags. And it goes further back than that. It goes back to the majority in Plessy versus Ferguson, who were denounced in with the thunderous righteousness of the first Justice Harlan, who told them that history will despise them for what they had done. And in fact, history does, or at least has. I'm sure there are at least six fans of that majority on the court right now. Or Roger B. Taney, writing for the majority in Dred Scott. Or the Supreme Court majority that said it was okay to steal land from indigenous tribes because they weren't Christian. Now, check out C-SPAN, Darlene in Connecticut. It says, press conference that hailed the decision. There was an Asian student represented, and one of the other idiots actually said it. He said the word woke, I think, in reference to the colleges and corporations and how his minority relatives are thrilled with this decision. He looked like a white skinhead to me, by the way. Oh, they had this down, Darlene says. The scheme, as Senator Whitehouse called it, had this one down. Down cold. Ralph's pointing out, and maybe also Brad and Melissa Shithead were financially supported by Leonard Leo. Well, they do farm cases. The courts. Steve in New York writes, as you know, as an attorney, I, and you at one point in a former life, took an oath to uphold the U.S. and state constitutions upon our admission to the bar. I can freely admit that I put zero value on this oath. I have zero respect for any court, whether federal or New York state court. I can only speak for New York because that's the only place I practice. In that regard, I don't think I could ever argue a case in the Supreme Court because I could very well see myself saying to the likes of Thomas and Alito and Brat Kavanaugh, who likes beer, If they ask me a question, I'm sorry, I don't feel any obligation to answer the questions of patently perjurious and illegitimate judges. The reason I don't see myself arguing before the United States Supreme Court is because of what I could very well say is not only because of the consequences to me, but because of the impact it would have on my client's case. I see my only obligation as winning my client's case, everything else be damned. The courts are a means to an end, and a rather bad one at that, but that's the only game we have to play. Sounds a lot like a realization I came to a lot of years ago. The three M's. Protect the money. Punish the mean ones. And manage the morons. Steve adds, a colorblind world. You know, I don't want to live in a colorblind world. I want to live in a color-conscious world. I want to live in a world where I get to meet and experience people of all colors, religions, cultures, races, nationalities. The notion of the desire for a colorless world is nothing more than a bullshit way to ensure the dominance of a particular group of people, in our country, white people. The issue is not whether a person sees color. I know I do. The issue is whether one sees color as spicing up life, or whether one sees color as poisoning it. Ta-da! I know. Randy Radar says, oh, Robin, pull yourself up by your legacy heritage. Wouldn't you love to get Brett Kavanaugh just absolutely beard up out of his mind and say, ah, come on, Brat, you had some privilege along the way, didn't you? Little black kid who did what you did, that girl in high school. That kid would be in the school-to-prison pipeline before he could say equal protection. And a lot of news outlets are writing about Ketanji Brown Jackson's blistering of Fappy Thomas, using words like excoriated her colleagues with let them eat cake obliviousness today. The majority pulls the ripcord and announces color blindness for all by legal fiat, but deeming race irrelevant in law does not make it so in life. History speaks. In some form, it can be heard forever. The race-based gaps that first developed centuries ago are echoes from the past that still exist today. By all accounts, they are still stark. Which leads me to a moment of, you know, if I was a praying girl, and I'm not, if I was a praying girl, I'd say, dear God, please let Joe Biden appoint 3 more justices. From the other side. Leave Elena and Sonia alone and Ketanji alone and let Joe Biden appoint 3 more. Then we wouldn't have to go through the whole reform the court business. And boy, I tell you what, if Sonia and Elena and Ketanji had 3 more colleagues on their side, hoo-wee! The maggots and the conservative white people, oh, they'd be having kittens with crocheted tails. I mean, they'd be having babies every 15 minutes online and social media and, well, hashtag STS. Oh, she drilled them. No one benefits from ignorance. Although formal race-linked legal barriers are gone, race still matters to the lived experiences of all Americans in innumerable ways, and today's ruling makes things worse, not better. The best that can be said of the majority's perspective is that it proceeds ostrich-like from the hope that preventing consideration of race will end racism, but if that is its motivation, the majority proceeds in vain. If the colleges of this country are required to ignore a thing that matters, it will not just go away. It will take longer for racism to leave us, and ultimately ignoring race just makes it matter more. And she talked about what being race conscious in college admissions means to the country. A less diverse pipeline to these top jobs accumulates wealth and power unequally across racial lines, exacerbating racial disparities in a society that already dispenses prestige and privilege based on race. And Vice President Kamala Harris spoke up and said, "I encourage you to read it all," because she is a beautiful writer who is compelled by logic and knowledge of history and a clarity of thinking about where we have been as a country and where we have the potential to go. Vice President Harris was down at the Global Black Economic Forum in New Orleans today. Vice President Harris added, "It is a complete misnomer to suggest this is about being colorblind, when in fact it is about being blind to history." And not to give short shrift to Sonia Sotomayor, she said the devastating impact of this decision cannot be overstated. The majority's vision of race neutrality will entrench racial segregation in higher education because racial inequality will persist so long as it is ignored. But like I said, old balls and strikes, like a dog returning to its vomit. Sorry about that. There went dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Yeah, he has a fetish for saying there's no more racism in America. And I guess in the very lily-white world in which he lives, he certainly never sees it or experiences it. Part of the reason, I think, looking back, part of the reason that they did the redistricting, like I said, there was horse trading going on. Part of the reason that they did the redistricting case the way they did out of Alabama was because it's Alabama. And by creating one majority black congressional district, the Republican Party was not threatened. They saw it as no harm, no foul. Yeah, we'll say Alabama's wrong. Cool. They'll more or less ignore us. And go on being Alabama and go on being Republican. Darlene in Connecticut says, "I'm beginning to think that there's some awfully weird, sick, and twisted intellectual incest going on among those six SCOTUS injustices. And that fat, dumpy little turd, Leonard Leo, and his filthy Federalist Society, oops, Socialist, oops, Society, are right at the bloody heart of it." Joe said today that the SCOTUS is not a normal court. I guess that's a start. Yeah, we can just start calling them all Abby. Abby Gorsuch. Abby Handmaid. You know, Abby Normal. Subject affirmative action gutted, Cynthia writes. Hi, Robin. Hi, Cynthia. "A single drive-by comment as I'm about to get my hands in it with some serious cleaning chores, but I will have you on in the background." And my comment? When people have no stake in society, why the hell should they support it? They won't. I sure as hell wouldn't. We need affirmative action. And, you know, this really isn't so much about Harvard as it is the University of North Carolina. And maybe not so much about the University of North Carolina, but about the University of Alabama and the University of Mississippi and the University of Georgia and the University of Florida. LSU, Mississippi State, Tennessee, Kentucky, my own beloved Harvard on the Mon. Because it's not just that the smart black kids won't get into Harvard and Yale and Princeton and Cornell and Penn and Brown and Dartmouth. It's that they won't get into Texas. They won't get into Michigan. They won't get into Mr. Jefferson's University or William and Mary. This is about, well, there is not much difference between this decision today and the laws passed in the antebellum South forbidding enslaved people from even learning to read. Well, Emilio, okay, cowbell. There's no more racism in America. I can barely see it through my hood eye holes. Everything's kind of hazy. That may be the smoke, too, Emilio. But Cynthia is so right. Where's the buy-in to a system that has no room for you in it? And I tell you what, if Fappy Thomas felt like a token at Yale getting in under his under affirmative action, well, Yale and Harvard and the others will wind up looking like a big pile of salt with one little flake of ground black pepper in it. That's going to be tokenism. Let's step back for a moment and make something clear, Steve says. Everyone has to meet the basic requirements to get into school. Every one of those people are qualified and meet the quantitative admission standards. I'm going to take issue with that in a second. Color is among the qualitative factors that an admissions committee goes through to maximize what a student experiences when coming to that particular school. It strikes me that this ruling will have the effect of making admissions decisions nothing more than checking quantitative boxes. If there are, for example, 200 spots at a school, that particular school will admit the first 200 people who meet the quantitative metrics. There will be no qualitative factors unless, of course, those legacy admissions. And that's where I was going to take issue with you. Because you cannot convince me that George W. Damn Bush was fully qualified to get in to the Harvard Business School and get a bullshit MBA. He had a professor there who said he was an absolute idiot. Just like Trump had one at Penn. But those legacies are good for the endowment. W went to Yale because Daddy went to Yale, and Daddy went to Yale because Grandpappy went to Yale. Lather, rinse, repeat. I'm not wrong. There was not a word about a legacy admission. But you know what? Maybe there should be a case now brought by some poor kid, poor but brilliant kid, whose spot at Harvard or Yale is being taken by the scion of G.I. Love Money or J.P. Got Rocks. Let those little fuckers go to community college. And I'm not denigrating community college. Please, I've said that I've used the term two or three times. I think that's three now. And that's not what I'm saying. learning is learning. It's the concentration of talent in the faculties of these universities that makes all the difference in the world. Schools that were designed, you know, the Ivy League was largely a series of divinity schools. Schools designed to educate the shitbird sons of the wealth class in this country with an eye toward turning them into ministers of the gospel. It has always been by the rich, for the rich, and of the rich. And that, by the way, is another one of those things that the right wing hates in this country. The idea that people of limited means might actually be as smart or smarter than them, and so they feel compelled to make sure that that can never be proven true. Our six most puissant dread sovereign supreme Catholic majesties were standing up first and foremost for concepts of white supremacy. And Fappy Thomas, well, he's there to do their bidding. And this is ugly. It's just ugly. Randy Radar says this is not going to turn out well. No, it isn't. And Jack in Shreveport, subject line, affirmative action. Concerning a colorblind approach to the court's decision, all we need to look to is when the Roberts Court wiped out the preclearance section in voting in civil rights state legislation. The vulture-like bigots were there at the ready, cutting into voting rights almost immediately. They'll be there for affirmative action, too, though I think the results won't be as visible as in the voting rights cases. It'll take a generation, but it'll be visible. It'll be visible, Jack. But I just had a thought. It's not fully formed. So maybe we can workshop it. Based on these cases, what happens to say, the Ohio State University, when they want to recruit a black kid who runs a 4.440 as a wideout, and some white Brad who runs a 7.240 claims that he has a right to that wideout position. And that he's being discriminated against because college football is just one big affirmative action program. When Randy Radar said this will not end well, my goodness gracious, can you hear the howls of outrage? On the right wing, if their beloved football schools were forced to follow the admissions practices that were set out for college admissions practices generally. I don't know. But maybe that's what the Supreme Court wants, you know,
it's not like black kids don't have an avenue to get into good schools. They can always play basketball or football. You know, probably not baseball, because that's a thinking man's sport.
You see how it all kind of weaves together in a hateful, toxic little braid? Yeah. Thank you, Emilio. Emilio just got us started for the evening. We're down to 21:15 in our desperate and somewhat perhaps quixotic search for fully funding for the month of June. Thank you, Emilio. Hopefully you'll have some company. So that's that case. And I really would appreciate kind of bringing me in off the ledge a little bit, because I don't shout and scream as much as I used to. But I am damned mad. I am damned furious. And in part it's because it was supposed to be getting better during the entirety of my life. My first grade class was the first integrated class to start school together down in Talabama. And progress was supposed to be made. But one can never expect or anticipate progress as long as there are conservative Republicans. And it is a fool's errand to think otherwise. But anyway, I'd appreciate some thoughtful thought thinking about this and the other case conversation wise. Is there is there any good to be derived from this, other than the fact that this makes, you know, a small handful of wealthy black men feel better, and a huge handful of wealthy white men feel better? Because if there is, I'm it's plumb evading me. But it is Thursday, and that means we have the Green News Report. And so I'm going to sort of back up and regroup and retool and get regrooved. Hey, Scott, are you okay? It's been a long time since we've heard from you. We worry, my friend. Not about anything in particular. It's just when members of the family go quiet. Maybe worry's not the right word. We fret. But anyway, let's see what Brad and Desi have for us. And then we'll do the next case and talk about what's coming tomorrow, because something's coming tomorrow. Okay?
It's Thursday, June 29, 2023.
Canada's wildfire season is now officially the worst ever recorded.
Canada's fires shatter records, sending smoky air back to the U.S. and to Europe. Intensifying rainstorms pose hidden flood risk across U.S. Plus,
to remove PFAS from public water systems across the country is an enormously expensive endeavor.
3M settles another lawsuit over forever chemicals in municipal drinking water systems.
All of those toxic stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
They want to take away your washing machines and your dryers.
Nope, they don't.
They don't want to give you any water for the washing machine.
Also a lie. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Hey, sorry that we got to fire up the Donald Trump fact-checking again, but so be it. What do you have for us today, Desi Doyen?
Well, smoky summers may be our new normal in the U.S. Air quality is again plummeting for millions of Americans, this time in the upper Midwest and Northeast, due to smoke from Canadian wildfires. This week, Chicago, Milwaukee, and Detroit vied for the city with the worst air quality in the world. The Canadian smoke has even crossed the Atlantic Ocean to hit the U.K. and Spain. Officials in Canada say 2023 is officially Canada's biggest fire season in modern history, with fires coast to coast, driven by unusually hot and dry weather. And it's not even peak fire season yet. Canada's wildfire emissions are also breaking records. Europe's climate service Copernicus reports that over the last 20 years, Canada's carbon emissions from wildfires have increased along with the land area burned. This year, Canada's fires have released 85% of its annual average greenhouse emissions. That's roughly equivalent to Indonesia's annual carbon emissions from burning fossil fuels. Abundant scientific evidence shows human-caused climate change is intensifying wildfires, creating a self-reinforcing feedback loop. As the fires send more climate-warming emissions into the atmosphere, in turn worsening global warming and wildfire conditions.
Yeah, but think about all the money that Canada's made from all that dirty tar sands oil.
Good point. In Texas, the relentless, record-shattering heat wave has sent hundreds of people to emergency rooms and killed at least 13, including in the state's prisons, which mostly have no air conditioning.
Wow.
Extreme heat now kills more people in the United States than any other weather event, according to federal data. Especially dangerous are multiple consecutive days of extreme heat and warm overnights that don't allow our bodies to cool down. A recent Climate Central analysis projects that today's record highs will be average summer temperatures by 2050, with the South forecast to see two full months over 100 degrees.
And Texas has seen triple-digit temperatures now in its third week.
A different study warns that intensifying rainstorms pose hidden flood risks across the U.S. The First Street Foundation finds that rainstorms are capable of dumping significantly more water than federal data indicates in some regions. That means data used to set design standards for new infrastructure is outdated and understates the risk of extreme rain and flood events, particularly in the Northeast and along the Gulf Coast. Climate change has increased the intensity and frequency of severe rainstorms in recent decades, and that is raising the risk of U.S. flood control failure. In accountability news, Minnesota-based chemical giant 3M will pay more than $10 billion to settle a lawsuit alleging that its toxic PFAS chemicals contaminated U.S. public drinking water systems. It's the latest among several cases pending against the company. PFAS chemicals are used in firefighting foam, non-stick applications, and a host of consumer products, and are linked to cancers and birth defects. They're called forever chemicals because they don't break down in the environment and are incredibly costly to remove, according to Scott Summey, one of the attorneys representing the municipalities that sued.
These water systems have to install expensive water treatment in order to remove the chemicals. This settlement, being the largest drinking water settlement in American history, will go a long way.
I guess they thought there'd be forever profits from those forever chemicals.
Finally, some good news. The Biden administration proposed new rules to restore protections to the Endangered Species Act that had been rolled back by disgraced former President Donald Trump. The new proposed rules will make it easier to protect wildlife from climate disruptions and other threats, make it harder to remove a species from the endangered list, and eliminates a Trump-era policy that allowed regulators to consider economic issues like lost profits for the oil and gas industry when deciding whether a species deserves protections.
Good. We will take what we can get. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
A good day.
All better now. Matt in San Francisco says, I wish I could live in a society free of bigotry, homophobia, and transphobia. Simply ignoring it and declaring it no longer exists isn't going to prevent the next Matthew Shepard or Brandon Tina. We really need to expand the court. There are too many lives hanging in the balance. I agree, Matt. And, you know, it's sort of a negative proof. But every time we say we need to expand the court, the right-wing monsters prove that need by screaming, "You can't expand the court, that's back in the court!" When the reason we get decisions like today is because Nitwit Nero packed the court. With, of course, the aid and comfort and abetting of Moscow Mitch McConnell. You ever wonder who Joe Biden would have chosen for Attorney General if Merrick Garland had already been on the court? Because I do. Let's see. A couple of interesting pieces of thinking. Lou says, I was speaking of Scott in San Diego. But Lou asks, can't Harvard reconstitute itself as a private club like single-sex golf clubs and practice whatever admissions policies it desires? By the way, I've taken classes at Harvard and Hopkins and community college, and the community colleges were just fine. On the other hand, Theo writes, you're not wrong about community college, sadly. This decision galls me because so much young talent is going to be shut out of university educations for possibly generations. Community colleges, I'm a product of one, tend to attract teachers trying to get footholds in building careers or retired from them. It's mostly by luck that students there find really gifted instructors. I lucked onto several who taught journalism, theater, public speaking. That last guy also doubled with progressive English literature classes, including science fiction. The students who did best were polishing talents which they already possessed. For a lot of others, it's marking time. Subject Hive Mind, Canon Northwest PA, says, I just had the same thought earlier about the expectation of a progressive future. However, the so-called originalists illustrate their regressive nature. And just a little bit of happy news, and I'm going to celebrate with you, Don in West Tennistan. This is not a product placement notice, subject line, food porn. But after all these years, Kaneka sausage is available in our local store, Walmart. Good on them and us. Don, you're probably going to binge on Kaneka for a little bit. Don't feel bad about it. Do it different ways. Here's one. Sauté your Kaneka with kimchi. Been on kind of a kimchi kick. It's all probiotic and everything, and it's spicy and good. Oh, it goes so well with Kaneka. And here in West Virginia, there's a little company up in Clarksburg called Oliverio's. There's parts of West Virginia you can't swing a dead cat without hitting an Oliverio. Sorry about the dead cat reference. I don't think the cat would like it being swung if it were still alive. But Kaneka, done with their like wax peppers and green peppers and like paprika type peppers in like a marinara sauce. Yeah, that's fantastic too. Put it on a nice bun with the finely shredded mozzarella. Happy times. Enjoy. Enjoy, Don. And I've already grossed out Tamara. Sorry, hon. Actually, I didn't gross out Tamara. Darlene, you grossed out Tamara with the Supreme Court incest remark. That got a big, ew! Billable Rick noting,
Robin, stop telling Don how to binge on Kaneka.
You've had Kaneka, Billable. You know why. And I'd like to thank an anonymous friend of the program who just got us below $2,000 in our desperate search to end this program, or end not the program, but end this month for the program fully funded. So we are now at $1,999 to go. It won't go up for the rest of the month. It can only go down. Thank you. Thank you so much. You know, I bet down there, Don, I bet down there at the Kaneka factory, if they knew that they were being touted by a bunch of damn liberals, well, let's just not tell them. Shh. So there was another court case. And by the way, there's other things of note this evening that sort of beg for our attention. Woohoo! To getting below $2,000 from that's Ralphs. Thank you, Ralphs. You're a dear. I don't know, Emilio. Those are the great questions of the universe. Emilio says, why isn't there a show called Saute with George Takei? People would watch that. Oh, I'd watch George Takei brush his damn teeth, okay? I mean, George Takei is a national treasure. A real one, not like Phyllis Schlafly. But no, there's some... noteworthy things like, let me find it. We'll get into the other case in just a minute. I just need a little bit of a breather. Feel like I've been wallowing with the hogs in the slop. There she is. Marginal trailer queen. Now, we're gonna have to reformat this program. We're gonna have to have some that, you know, guaranteed no marginal trailer queen references in this. Marginal trailer queen free radio. You know, she's got a podcast. In point of fact, there's a studio in Washington, D.C. dedicated solely and exclusively to providing podcast platforms for the absolute worst of the god-awful maggots. And so that's why she has a podcast. Well, in an effort to promote her podcast, she's now posting photos of herself and her Battleground podcast of her carrying a high-capacity rifle, an assault rifle, as she pulls up to the capital of the United States. This woman's a menace. She's actually complained, back in December of last year, she complained about how if she and the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells, Stevie Three Shirts Bannon, if they had planned January 6th, we would have been armed. And of the terrorists who attacked the Capitol, she said, I am one of those people. That's exactly who I am. Forget it, Jake. It's the 13th Congressional District of Georgia. Y'all, they really want to do it again. Now, this is kind of interesting. Going back to the affirmative action decision. The NAACP today also expressed some disapproval of affirmative action. But did it in a sort of backhanded manner. The president and CEO of the NAACP is Derek Johnson. And he said something that I alluded to earlier. The worst thing about affirmative action is that it created a Clarence Thomas who benefited from the program and now is in a position where he's going to deny many young African-American talented individuals an opportunity. Powerful stuff. Let's hear it in his own voice.
In this Supreme Court's legacy, the worst thing about affirmative action is that it created a Clarence Thomas who benefited from the program and now is in a position where he's going to deny many young African-American talented individuals an opportunity. Historically, the problem has been that institutions of higher learning, corporations, companies, and other entities have denied well-qualified African-Americans and other individuals access in terms of admissions, employment, because of their race. And we were affirming the actions of past wrong deeds to ensure that we have a diverse population and not an apartheid reality in the United States. This is an unfortunate situation for the citizens of this country as we participate in a global reality. We're no longer participating in a myopic Alabama or Mississippi segregated reality. We are in a global reality where the globe looks more diverse than what people want to recognize. We cannot, as a nation, continue down this track.
We're still reading the opinion, and we'll get more from our Laura Gerda and Julia Ainsley on those specifics. But one of the things that came up during the oral arguments back in October that sort of signaled the conservative justices were leaning this direction was a quote from Justice Alito in which he asked, "What do you learn from merely checking the box? You know, we who have filled out these college applications know what he's talking about. It asks for your race or ethnicity. You check the box. You also have to do oftentimes some kind of an essay as part of the admissions process." How do you answer his question, Derek?
Well, what we learned is that a diverse setting allowed for the individual geniuses from many communities to participate in opportunities to bring forth some of the most creative minds that this nation have ever seen. In a way in which race is not a factor to bar opportunity, that race is celebrated, that diversity is celebrated, that cultural uniqueness is celebrated, so that we can have a more perfect union, a society that looks more inclusive like the demographics and less like a 1950 reality in which people are trying to run us back to.
He's not wrong. And you know what? Let's add one more thing. There's a reason right-wingers hate affirmative action so much that isn't perhaps quite as obvious. I mean, the right, Republican Party, maggots, conservatives, are racist AF. The most recent former president of the United States is literally the son of a Klansman who doesn't have the courage to denounce his father for being a Klansman. I mean, that's a thing. But something happens to the children of racist Republicans when they go to school with people who aren't lily white. These Ivy League institutions are supposed to be the very best of the best of the best, sir. And when the best of the best of the best, sir, includes a wide variety of cultural contexts, a little bit of compassion and understanding might rub off on the god-awful children of the god-awful racist right-wingers. I mean, apparently a little bit rubbed off on George W. Bush, because back when then Kanye West said George Bush don't like black people, while George Bush was letting black people drown in New Orleans after Katrina, well, dim leader would go on to write his memoirs and declare that the saddest day of his life was the day that Kanye West said George W. Bush don't like black people. And a much larger discussion to be had around that. Yes, it was. Thank you for noticing, Stephen, New York. Best of the best of the best, sir! Don't even know why we're here. Was that for Men in Black, Steve asks? Yes, it was. And, of course, there's... oh, there's another Men in Black line. And, you know, our dear friend Dan Fisher worked props on that movie. He's the one who, Dan dropped the baseball on the guy's head from a ladder. The guy in the Mets uniform dropped the baseball on his head time after time after time till they got it just right. The scene toward the end. Come on, it's an old movie. I'm not going to spoil it for any. Well, there might be young people listening. Anyway, Dan got to do that. But there's the scene where Will Smith jumps onto the double-decker bus and looks at the shocked tourists and says, yeah, it'd just be raining black people up in here. Yeah, that's what Ann's boy Neil and Brat and the Handmaid and Sammy Bad Breath and old Balls and Strikes, that's what they were really worried about.
Oh, our beloved Ivy League institutions, it'd just be raining black people up in here.
I feel really bad about doing Giraffe's voice for the, but you know, I was doing that voice before Giraffe even came into the picture, so we're good. I'm just so pleased that you recognized the line, Steve. And I did a thing today. If you look on Facebook, you'll see it. Or Instagram. Probably put it on Twitter. Something I've been thinking about since 1981. And made it happen today. Makes me feel really good. I'm really in a good mood. Just call me Tarna. No, don't call me Tarna. That was just a hint. But no, there's another case out there that they handed down today. Randy Radar says, yeah, it's dark and they're wearing sunglasses.
Okay, did you ever flashy thing me?
No.
Tell me the truth?
Yeah. So, the other case. We've talked about this in discussing the nasty things that were coming toward us. And this is one of those horse trading cases. Anytime I see a unanimous nine justice opinion come out of the Supreme Court, I'm thinking there's been some horse trading. And I don't know what they traded to get this. I have an idea, or at least a hope. Hope in one hand and the other, and see which one fills up first. But now our most puissant dread sovereign supreme Catholic majesties have declared that, well, if an evangelical Christian gets fired because he won't work on Sunday, that violates his religious liberty and freedom. Sit, liberty, sit. They didn't specifically, and this is probably why it is a unanimous decision, they did not actually reach the merits of the case, namely, and to wit, whether this shitbird could be fired for refusing to do his job. The religious maniac in question is Gerald Groff. I'm Groff. The theocracy dog. Sorry. Things happen in my brain. Well, he couldn't work Sunday shifts delivering mail because he observes the Sunday Sabbath. Meanwhile, the Seventh-day Adventists are out there going, huh? What? Wait a minute. And the Jews are like, hey, yo, what? And the Muslims are probably scratching their heads, too. The Buddhists are washing their rice bowls. But it was 9-0, and Gerald Groff claimed he was discriminated against because he wouldn't deliver mail on Sundays, because Jesus would get mad at him and never, ever forgive him, even though Jesus forgives literally everything. Did you try asking your Lord to forgive you for working on the Sabbath so you could have a job and not starve to death there, Gerald Groff? Did you take it to the Lord in prayer, son? But this is one of those moments. I almost feel like there has to be some horse trading going on. Because old Balls and Strikes let Sammy Bad Breath write the opinion. And that means that even though he's as crooked as a dog's hind leg and takes fishing trips to $1,000 a night lodges on $100,000 airplane seats, well, Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan and Ketanji Brown Jackson had to swallow a lot of pride to sign off on this piece of shit. So what they did is the justices sent it back down to the lower court and said, oh, we're going to give you a new framework to look at this by. One hopes that the court will look at the new framework and say, nah, Gerald Groff, you're still a dick. Go find a job that doesn't make you not... Go get a job at Chick-fil-A, Gerald Groff. They don't work on Sunday. That should be great for you.
Yeah, but the postal job was a really good money.
Well, that's the trade-off. You work Sundays, dipshit. You know, over here at one of the convenience stores, they pay $2 extra an hour for people willing to work the midnight shift. Because that's just how beloved, blessed capitalism works. Sammy Bad Breath said that if an employer wants to deny a request for religious accommodation, an employer must show that the burden of granting an accommodation would result in substantial increased costs in relation to the conduct of its particular business. Ha! Isn't that interesting? Religious freedom is so important, you know, if you're Hobby Lobby and you want to make sure that you don't have to pay for your female employee's slut medicine. That was what Rush Limbaugh called it, the pill. But if there's enough money at stake, the Supreme Court says, yeah, you can tell Gerald Groff to go get a job at fucking Chick-fil-A. And so he said, in describing an employer's undue hardship defense, the Hardison case referred repeatedly to substantial burdens, and that formulation better explains the decision. We therefore, like the parties, understand Hardison to mean that undue hardship is shown when a burden is substantial in the overall context. This is some serious angels dancing on the head of a pin, sophistic bullshit. So as a result of all of this, the new framework, Star Wars, a new framework. Oh, no, it's A New Hope. It's just one movie reference after another around here, isn't it? But, no, One silk stocking law firm lawyer, Tracy Diamond, said the ruling will make it more difficult for employers to say no to a request for an accommodation for religious reasons. And this is a door we really didn't want to open, but that's what our most pious and supreme Catholic majesties are hell-bent on doing. Shaking all the creepy shit out of Pandora's bottle. On the other hand, Aaron Street, no kin to Della, he argued the case for Gerald Groff. Said he was
thrilled the court today recognized that an America that values religious pluralism should respect the religious liberty rights of every employee.
Sit, liberty, sit. Woof! United States Postal Service, well, they didn't have anything to say. And I'm sorry, but I find it absolutely hilarious that this case arose under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And Gerald Groff is, of course, a white Brad. So, the law was amended by Congress in 1972. And in amending the law, they said that an employer has to reasonably accommodate the Gerald Groffs of the world. And that if an employee requests something out of the way for religious reasons, the employer has to demonstrate that it would be an undue hardship to deny it. Gerald Groff is from Lancaster County, PA. And he delivers the rural mail. And the problem, the whole problem developed after the U.S. Postal Service inked a deal with Amazon in which Amazon insisted on Sunday deliveries. It's Jeff Bezos. He's the devil. So, Groff eventually winds up in Holtwood, PA, after a transfer because he didn't want to work Sundays. But Amazon found Holtwood, PA, too, for Sunday and insisted on Sunday delivery. So then Groff's supervisor busted his ass, or their ass, or trying to get carriers to swap shifts with Groff, but apparently Groff is an asshole. So many evangelicals are. And nobody wanted to swap with him, and that was the only thing that they could do. And the Postal Service warned him, they suspended him, they did everything but fire him. Because he would not do his job. And so in America now, you can say, well, I'm not doing my job because Jesus. Never mind that, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's business. And so in 2019, Gerald Groff, he quit. He said he didn't have no choice but to quit because Jesus was mad at him. And then he sued the Postal Service to get his pockets lined. And so all the courts followed the law, and Groff lost at the trial court level, saying that the Postal Service was doing all they could by doing the shift swap thingy. and that that was a reasonable accommodation. And then the third United States Circuit Court of Appeal said, yeah, Postal Service is really trying here. And then the Postal Service's case was doomed the minute that Americans for the Separation of Church and State chimed in and said, good on ya. And so that's probably not the moment it was doomed. It was doomed the minute that the handmaid and Anne's boy Neil and Brat got on the court. Because they're all theocratic maniacs. But it could have been worse. One lawyer said the court refused to decide the specifics of Groff's case and is leaving that to the lower courts, which got the case right the first time around. We live to fight another day. Hard cases make bad law. And I'll only offer this. I said that, you know, there's more cases coming. Well, tomorrow, we're going to get 1, 2, 3 creative. That's the case of the religious maniac who said that she was afraid to open her business because Colorado might make her make wedding websites for the queers. Now, I said all along that this case was a fraud upon the court. Turns out there's been some actual fraud upon the court, at least in terms of people listed as being part of the case. Because remember, 123 Creative and the Karen behind it brought this case to get basically a preemptive declaration from the court that she didn't have to serve no queers. And so in setting up the case, she and the Alliance Defaming Freedom or whatever other judicial... it's the Alliance Defaming Freedom... they had to set up a scenario in which there was somebody who had asked her to make a gay wedding website. And somebody finally called the person that the Alliance Defaming Freedom cited. And he answered the phone. And he said, I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm straight. I'm married. I've got a kid. I have no need for a wedding website, gay, straight, or anywhere in between. And I have no idea how you got my name and number. As we know from the trans cases, the Alliance Defaming Freedom are a bunch of theocrats who are trying to mask their theocracy in some sort of constitutional claim of liberty. They're liars. They're grifters. And, you know, they, along with the Leonard Leos of the world and the Federalist Society and whatnot, gin up cases, whether they're actually cases or not, to get their theocracy stamped approved by our most puissant dread sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties. See how it works? Yeah. That's coming tomorrow. And I said that I always suspect horse trading when I see a unanimous decision. And I really want to believe, and I'm remembering, of course, that's the most dangerous word in the English language, I believe. I want to believe that the swap was Gerald Groff winning his case in exchange for telling 123 Creative to go stick a computer where the sun won't shine. 123, go. But it's the most vague and tremulous of hopes. And Lou just pointed out, without the prospect of rolling school debt relief, even more doors will be shut as the USA strives to compete in the 21st century. Not wrong, Lou. That's coming too. We may have one hell of a Friday on the front porch tomorrow. Be fun if some folks would jump in and we'll talk about all this some more. By the way, I have to give a cowbell. This is a total non sequitur. That cowbell goes out to Micah in Michigan, who dropped me a note earlier and said, she said, henceforward, can we refer to Stockton Rush now, you know, of the libertarian death thermos? Can we refer to Stockton Rush as Stockton Crush? I know. Brutal, but effectively true. And thank you to Canton, Ohio. We are now down to $1,899 in our quest to end the month of June fully funded. Ralph's asks the obvious question. Good job. Thank you. So, Robin, since the plaintiff in 123 Creative doesn't have a client to refuse, what happens? They'll decide the case anyway. Cases actually being real and justiciable does not matter to a gang of most puissant, dread sovereign, supreme Catholic, theocratic majesties. They proved that last summer when they decided the Bruin case against New York City, even though New York City had already gotten the law off the books. It was a non-case. Everything had been mooted out. Heard somebody referred to something as, well, because of because of that, this case is mute. No, it's moot. M-O-O-T, moot. Mute is M-U-T-E. You don't want to live in my brain. You just don't. It itched. It made my brain itch. And I did not interrupt my meal to say, it's moot, damn it, moot, not mute. Alliance Defending Freedom, Stephen, New York, says, I think I'm going to call these people up and see if they'll take my case. I don't want to have to serve evangelicals because I'm a devout Catholic who thinks that all Protestants are heretical and anathema. Representing them would make me have to endorse their heretical and anti-Christian ways. Oh, Steve, do it. The only way to get through this lunacy is to do a complete reductio ad absurdum with all of it. Kind of like making sure there's no affirmative action in football recruiting and college football. Then again, then the Supremes might side with you. Because they'd probably like to set fire to some Protestants too, and they're just waiting for the case of the good Catholic to come before them and say, well, we want to burn some Protestants, but it would be best if we found a Protestant gay tran to burn. That's what we'd really like to burn, Your Honors. Burn them. Can we stack the wood? Fappy Thomas would ask. Can I light the match? Brett Kavanaugh would ask. I'll get the anchor chain, is what Sammy Bad Breath Alito would say. And, well, the handmaid would say, whatever you fellas want to do, I'm here to serve. Can I bake cookies? God, they're awful. Let's run over to the phones and see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Stockton Crush?
Stockton Crush.
Stockton Crush?
Yes, darling, Stockton Crush. Do we love Micah for that?
That is so bad it's good. I love it.
Oh, my God. Yeah, perfect.
Stockton Crush. It sounds like it could be a soda or something.
With traces of human remains. Sorry.
Possibly human remains.
Possible human remains, yes.
Possibly human remains. Where are we at with the fundraising?
We are down to $18.99.
Okay, so I'd like to throw out a $100 challenge.
Thank you, Darlene.
So,
Is this Darlene's Stockton Crush Challenge?
Yeah, Darlene's Stockton Crush Challenge. But I can't take the cred for that because that came from your listener. So.
Oh yeah, that's Micah, and yeah. she's going to be completely.
Micah should really get that.
Yeah, she's going to be okay with that.
Yeah, that's amazing. Sorry, but. So where to begin? I always call in any seminal moments. This decision today, when Biden did give his speech to denounce this decision and he walked away, they were asking him to go back to court. You know, what do you think of this court and so on. And I brought that up once and I think you said, well, how is he going to do it? You know, how is he going to do it? So we have to understand that he really can't do that unilaterally. Although, you know, Republicans or maggots love the concept of a unilateral executive branch, you know, a unilateral president.
The Unitarian.
The Unitarian Executive.
Yeah.
When it's a Republican or a MAGAT president. But Sheldon Whitehouse has, you know, he is annoyingly practical. You know, there's just times like, you're so damn annoyingly practical. As much as I like him and he's constantly bringing up the dark money and the creepy billionaires behind the Supreme Court and the scheme and all of that. He's against packing the court, which whenever he's asked this question, and you're absolutely right, they never point out and he never bothers to mention that the court's already been packed. But his contention is that not only is it unrealistic, in terms of getting that through Congress, but he contends that if and when Republicans regain control of the houses and the executive branch and so on, that they will simply just pack the court themselves to counteract what Democrats packed. So his contention is that, you know, suddenly we're going to have 50 justices and it's going to get out of control. I know he's exaggerating a bit there, but he has a point. He has a point. So, on that, you know, unless we are prepared to never, ever, 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 ever allow Republicans to ever gain control of anything again, which this country is too stupid for that. His whole objective at this point he thinks it's more realistic to get term limits. And he's suggesting 18 years. And that, to me, is still too long as a woman. Now, he is a privileged white male, you know, and he is supportive of women's rights and their bodily autonomy. Same thing with Blumenthal. Again, they're older, privileged white males. They are distanced from the enormity, from the immediacy of what's happening on the ground in terms of Dobbs and, you know, the obliteration of Roe. And now with this affirmative action case, things are desperate now. And this case, what happened today, is I hold it in the same, on the same level. And we're in so much trouble with this court because they're evil. They are playing the long game. Like, I think C.J. Roberts is quietly thinking of the long game, like, you know, that he learned from Mitch McConnell. Learned it from him. I don't know. But we see where on social, like, humans are obliterating 50 years of whatever progress we've made, prepared to go all the way yet, like with the North Carolina case and the state legislature having ultimate authority. But I feel as though that's a yet. I think they're working their way towards it. And it's just a matter of time. And at this point, he's trying to walk that line. Because ultimately, I think they do want to grab that, too. There's a really good opinion that I read in Vox today about this decision today. And it's very clear that the Supreme Court's decisions are very much in the same vein as what the right, radical right, was doing with rights over a period of time. They just kind of chipped away at it, because they put universities in an untenable position. In terms of how they could enact the concept of affirmative action. Because when the school thought, well, we need to have a hard number quota, a certain percentage, that would be challenged in the Supreme Court. Well, you can't do that. And then if they said, well, then we need to have more ambiguous standards. Well, you can't do that. It's too ambiguous, is kind of what they said in today's decision. So they squeeze the university to the point where there's really no guidance in a way that, at least in, that could withstand challenge in the court. So they used slowly over time they were chipping away at this, at the concept of affirmative action, and making it so that they could just give it the death knell. It was a long game with that, too. Am I making any sense with this? It was a really good article with Fox.
No, you absolutely are. It makes perfectly good sense. Death by a thousand they cuts. Made it so,
exactly. They made it so that the schools really didn't know, how do we best do this? We know diversity is important in the student body, diversity in the ranks, diversity in
Well, it gives rise to another question, Darlene. Just as an example, I was filling out a form the other day, and it asked me my sex assigned at birth. Then it asked me my gender. And so, you know, the variance was clear, and basically I had to out myself on the form. But then, of course, it was 23andMe. Someone gave me a 23andMe. And so they have to know.
As a gift or something?
Pardon?
I'm sorry, as a gift or something? You got it as a gift?
Yeah. And so I'm filling out the thing online, and it wants to know my sex assigned at birth, and, you know, it's genetic material, so they're interested. I mean, there's a legitimate reason for asking, but they went on and asked my gender, and I joyfully clicked woman. But still, outing myself felt a little bit creepy, but that's not even really the point. The next questions were, are you Hispanic? No. Actually, that's why I'm spitting in this tube, to find out what I am, but never mind. But then they said, you know, what is your ethnicity? And, you know, there's all these, you know, African-American, Latino, Pacific, you know, AAPI. Mm-hmm. And then the last one's just white. And I wonder, you know, and that's because white culture is the dominant, is and historically has been the dominant culture. And it's meaningless to say, well, you know, and again, that's why I'm filling out the form to find out how boring I am. But in the end, when kids fill out these college applications, And I'm going through all this by way of trying to figure out a workaround for this malevolent racism that came bursting forth from the Supreme Court today. It cannot be illegal under this ruling for the application form to say, are you African American? Are you Asian American, Pacific Islander? Are you Native Alaskan, Indigenous American, Hispanic, etc., white? Because you need that data not just for affirmative action or even for diversity, but in order to track statistical outcomes among students and among groups of students. And that's part of what makes this all so stupid, this decision today. So one wonders if Harvard can't just go, okay, we have no reference to race whatsoever in our admission processes. Start letting the black kids in. I mean, what I'm getting at is, isn't there an aspect of this that harkens back to Andrew Jackson saying, Justice Marshall has rendered his decision, now let him enforce it? Talk on it. Okay, you came back. You were broken up there for a minute. I don't know what's going on. It's probably my fault. No, okay, you're back. Go ahead.
Okay, like a civil disobedience kind of thing?
No, we're not taking we're not taking race into account. We didn't look at race at all. It just turns out that these young black scholars are a hell of a lot smarter than their white counterparts. Sorry.
Right,
just
but you're
work
saying
out
the
that
enforcement
way. We're
piece.
Colorblind.
Right, but you're saying the SCOTUS does not have an enforcement mechanism, right? So,
well, I mean, they can write injunctions and the like, and you know, people can sue. But if Harvard walks in and says, "Nope, we did not consider it in any way, shape, form,
right,
or fashion," these kids just happen to be smarter than your kids. And we let smart people in. Y'all are the ones that wanted a pure colorblind meritocracy. Well, here it is. Well, we didn't mean it like that.
Exactly.
And it puts the Supreme Court in the corner of having in a corner of having to say,
well, I mean, when we said colorblind, we didn't mean not to let in the privileged white children.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to read her dissent, Katie J, because she truly is an educator. She's a teacher. Even when she was going through her confirmation hearing, I learned more about the law from her, just listening to her go through that and explain how she explained everything in a respectful way and a pedagogic way, I guess, but not, you know, it wasn't anything disrespectful or condescending, but she was fantastic. Is that the right word I'm using? In terms of the she's like a teacher.
Yes.
So she is far more worthy and probably even more worthy, than even Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but certainly far more worthy to take her seat than that awful, Amy Covid Barrett with that. This has brought some memories. Racism is how complex, is, and the prejudice attitude embedded in this nation, are. And that is that I, that memory of when I was dating this boy in high school, and you know, very much in school, he was kind of this popular guy, and he was funny, and he really liked English. That was his favorite class, and he was very, very good in it. As a matter of fact, he's teaching English to foreign language students to this day in another country. But we had our senior ball, my senior ball, so he was my date, of course, and his parents hosted us at their home for dinner leading up to the event. And so she's preparing the meal, which was very nice of her to do. He mentions that I had just been accepted to Fairfield University, which is a very good Jesuit school here in Connecticut.
Right.
Yep. And and like at the drop of the hat, and his family origins are English and Scottish. His mom goes, well, of course she got accepted to Fairfield University. She's their token Greek. And there was just dead silence. And I'm like, okay. And she serves me up the nice meal. Piece of her hair in it, which I was like looking at it, and I'm like, oh, gross. But I didn't like to say anything. I'm like, ew. After the event,
you broke up on the punchline. Do you mind repeating?
I'm sitting in one place too, so yeah, keep letting me know if I break up and I'll repeat.
Okay. Are you on a Bluetooth or anything?
I mean, not moving or anything.
Sometimes.
But on my cell, it's the only thing I got.
Huh.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, now.
Okay, so I just turned around and shifted a little bit south. So here's that word again. My dad imploded. He hit the roof and was just livid, and it took everything in my mother's power to stop him from calling my then-boyfriend's mother and telling her off. Because he saw me, how hard I worked to get accepted to that school. And I worked very hard. I didn't, you know, I studied, I'm not kidding. It was a very good public high school that we attended. And I studied 5 hours every night I was studying. I was overwhelmed with work and homework. And I graduated 10th in my class, cum laude. And I had an extremely intelligent, I mean, we had an incredibly intelligent class. It was, you know, a likable group of students. And there was one of the kids higher than I was, top 10 that they would talk about in terms of the smartest students in the class. And she got a perfect 5 on her advanced placement to Yale. And she wasn't even the valedictorian or the salutatorian. She was maybe 4th or 5th or something like that. And she got a perfect 5. And wound up going to Yale, hated it, and drove off to New Mexico and traveled cross country on a motorcycle with a future husband. But I digress. So the point being that, you know, back then, we're talking the 40s, 50s, 60s, 30s, 40s, 50s, all the way through the, probably things petered out a bit on this in the 90s, but we were known as the Greeks down the street. We were basically the black people down the street, you know, a little bit more melanin in our skin. I mean, my sister-in-law, she's full-blooded Greek, my brother's wife, and she's much more darker olive tone than I am. And so back then, I was considered a token student, even though I'm Caucasian, you know, I'm a Caucasian person.
So, well, but you bring up a good point, because that speaks to the fluidity of whiteness. Yeah, there was a time in this country where Irish people were not white. Italians and Greeks were not white. You know, French, Germans, English, Scots, Welsh, white.
Exactly.
Jews were not white.
Yeah.
Even if they were paler than I am, they were, because white is a status in the long run. And, you know, there's another thing that comes out of this decision today that Lou just pointed out to me, and it's part of the dissents, and it's compelling, and it shows the hypocrisy, the manifest hypocrisy at work in this decision today. Because in a footnote, old Balls and Strikes said, oh, by the way, this affirmative action decision does not touch the military academies. The government, the government has a compelling interest in making sure that we prepare black folks to die for this country.
Exactly. To be gunned down and sacrificed. Oh, of course.
It can further compelling interest. This opinion does not address the issue in light of the potentially distinct interests that military academies may present. And, well, the dissenting three were having none of it. Ketanji Brown Jackson, this is just so good. You're kind of going to want it. It's a dissent, but so was Justice John Marshall Harlan's in Plessy. We remember that more than we do the Plessy majority. I can't name anybody on the Plessy majority, but I can by God mention John Marshall Harlan. This court, the court, Ketanji Brown Jackson wrote, has come to rest on the bottom line conclusion that racial diversity in higher education is only worth potentially preserving insofar as it might be needed to prepare black Americans and other underrepresented minorities for success in the bunker, not the boardroom. That's a particularly awkward place to land in light of the history the majority opts to ignore.
Wow. Boy, she's brilliant. Damn.
And Sonia was...
I want her to be chief.
Oh, I do too. Well, and Sonia, in her dissent, drilled him too. She said...
She's a Latina.
She's a wise Latina. And she is. To the extent the court suggests national security interests are distinct, those interests cannot explain the court's narrow exemption, as national security interests are also implicated at civilian universities. And the only thing old Balls and Strikes could say was,
well, I mean, none of the service academies were in this litigation.
So that was a dog whistle, don't you think, to some aggrieved Brad and Melissa shitheads out there to sue West Point and say that some undeserving Negro is going to be a commissioned officer and not me.
Yeah.
The white fragility on display in this entire opinion is simply breathtaking. I mean, the same rationales at work in this opinion are the same rationales from 170, 200 years ago. Well, when enslaving white wealthy men would go to sleep every night, hoping to wake up the next morning in case, you know, those people rise up against us and chop us to chutney in the night. I mean, you cannot, because it was mentioned last night on the program, you cannot overestimate the gut-bending horror that ran through the white enslaving class in this country when the Haitian Revolution took place. They were scared to damn death that it was coming here next.
Right. Yep.
And these white folks and Uncle Ruckus are still scared about that. They're afraid that somewhere out there there's a future America, and it's almost genetic or something, that there's a future America out there where people of color will finally treat white people like white people treated people of color. I don't think that's out there. But by God, you can't convince a Republican.
Yeah. Because it's all projection.
Everything is even either projection or confession, Darlene. It's like the story last in yesterday's program about John Kelly, Nitwit Nero's chief of staff, calling him down when Trump was talking about wanting to bang his own daughter. It's all either projection or confession.
Or confession.
Yeah. And from all the creepy photographs, I'm guessing it's confession.
Yeah.
And I have you'll be pleased to know that Ralph's jumped in on your Stockton Crush challenge. That's another little cowbell. So there's only $75 to go on that. Thank you, Ralphs. And we got about a half
Thanks,
an hour.
Ralph.
We can finish that challenge with just a little bit of help, just $75, and that'll get us down to $16.99 to finish the month.
That's a lot.
Which is tremendous.
So, obviously the high school boyfriend and I, you know, my high school crush and we broke up, right?
Right.
And, both, and his mom and her husband were alumni of Gettysburg University?
Yeah.
Or is it college? Gettysburg College, I think it is. Gettysburg College. And that's where they met.
Aww.
So there's more to this story. So by then, you know, I had moved on. I went to Fairfield, you know, and I wasn't, you know, great school, excellent education, and, you know, got me to law school. I busted my ass. Very hard to get, to make, dean's list, that kind of thing. And I worked really hard. And, you know, I always think,
oh, you broke up.
This
just makes me crazy, Darlene, and I apologize. I so sincerely apologize. I thought I had this thing licked. It's beginning to make me think it's the Bluetooth unit inside the Roadcaster. I'm sitting here, and I'm not on the Wi-Fi with the stress line phone.
Huh.
I got five bars of 5G.
And, well, I've got five bars too.
Yeah, so
that's weird.
That almost puts the onus on the Bluetooth unit inside the Roadcaster. And they've come out with a new one, but it's not available in America yet because Rode is an Australian corporation.
So just keep pointing it out, and I'll repeat.
Okay.
Am I good now?
Yeah, you're great.
Okay.
No rhyme or reason.
Okay, so. So, I often think, you know, would I go back, you know, if I could do it over again, would I go back, you know, would I make the same choice to go to Fairfield U? And the answer is no. And I still, every single week it changes, like, well, what college, what university would I go to? And it changes every week. Well, you know, and here I get older and my interests change, and you know, now I think I'm on to maybe going overseas. Like I should have gone overseas instead. So I play this thought experiment with me. It's been going on for years and years. But my then now ex boyfriend, he always was going to go to his parents' alma mater, Gettysburg College. So his grades weren't good enough.
Oops.
So his grades were not good enough to get him into Gettysburg College. So guess what his parents did? They marked their asses right over to Gettysburg College.
And they said, you admit our precious pumpkin.
Yep, we are alumni. We've donated massive amounts of money. You need to admit our son. And he got admitted, not on his grades, but because his parents bought his way in.
Legacy.
Exactly. But I'm the token Greek. And I got in on the merits. I busted my ass in high school. It was hard work. It was grueling. I didn't socialize much. Talking to high school classmates, I didn't realize how much I was respected because of how hard I worked at school. I just thought I was a nerd and all that. But they're like, oh no, you were, you know, we were amazed at how hard you worked and
you
what a good student you were. I was more of a badass than I realized. So here she is, you know, projection or confession, right? But it also shows how much nuanced this is. The six idiots on the Supreme Court is just it's thing. There's another example, even more direct. My father was good friends with a lawyer from Waterbury, a wealthy lawyer. Privileged white male who had a son who was a big bull thrower. He didn't study. Everybody in his family were lawyers, so his son was headed in. It just seemed a logical thing. And I always liked the attorney. I liked him. He was a nice guy. He and my dad got along great. He loved to go fly fishing, so he was always in my dad's shop. He actually represented me through my parents for a vehicle, my first vehicle that I ever bought. My first car, I earned, I worked hard to make the money for, it was $3,000, a Toyota Celica. And so this was like the late 70s, early 80s. Early to mid 80s, and we discovered paperwork in the glove compartment to show that the odometer had actually been turned back. Okay.
Oh my.
So it had more mileage on it. Somebody turned back the odometer, and so that's a felony. That's fine.
It is in most states. You broke up again. Darlene, you broke up again. And it's probably on me.
Air took about $2,000 or $3,000 of that. Can you hear me?
I can now. You were breaking up. They had rolled back the odometer, and that's a felony.
Felony. Took about 2 or 3 years, the lawsuit, and we got a $10,000 settlement. And so the lawyers, I think I was left with maybe $4,000, but I was able to buy another car with it. And so the car that I bought had to sit at my parents' house, and I was like, here I am, 16, 17, 18. I was like, I want to drive my car. So my dad approached the lawyer, the friend, and said, look, she's a young girl. She wants to drive the car. She bought this car. So he was cool. The attorney said, they worked something out where I could drive it during the time that the lawsuit was, in process. So I was able to drive it. I had fun with it. And then part of the deal was I had to hand the car back over. I love that car. But I had to hand it back over for the $10,000 settlement, and then I could buy another car. So I actually got two cars for the price of one, so it's kind of cool. His son was this attorney and his family members were all graduates of Fairfield University.
Aha.
So his son... And I remember him saying this, and my dad told me this. I remember the attorney saying, my son he's got to apply himself. He doesn't want to apply himself in school. He doesn't really work hard, kind of concerned, to get him into Fairfield. Okay. He got denied. His son got denied entry into Fairfield University. I was a bit older than his son, so I think I was on my way, out. His family members, the entire family went down to the president's office. They had made a $100,000 donation. They had made a $100,000 donation. Quite a bit of money back in the 80s, 90s, where $100,000 donation to the university. The university denied their son's application. They went into admissions. Whoa. They went into the president's office, and they said, we just gave you a $100,000 donation. Why did you deny our son? Oops. Guess who got admitted to Fairfield University as a freshman?
Well, I'll be dipped. I was kind of hoping there'd be a little justice there.
No. No.
No.
So there's another prime example of, you know, legacy, buying.
Well, what's the modern term? What's the modern term? Nepo baby.
Yep. So this has been going on for generations. And you see how subtle these issues are, how subtle the stories are. And it's like me as a white woman, you know, as a woman, but a white woman, who was essentially considered to be basically, you know, the Greek down the street, basically of the same, you know, different, there are different levels of white. I remember, you know, all of this stuff was very stark to me back then. So that's what I encountered. That's what I witnessed. Can you imagine what's happening to African Americans in this country? So we can imagine that. So it's like these decisions, again, are steeped in white privilege, white male privilege, this simplistic view of what's really happening in this country. And it's because their white supremacy depends on it. So we continue to have to put up, we continue to see these devastating consequences of the long game. So they got their wish. You know, Mitch McConnell got his wish. He's thrilled.
Well, just in the course of this conversation, Darlene, and that's the way the best of these conversations go, they're thought-provoking, you just, for lack of a better term, triggered something in my mind. And that's this. I hate that I think this way, but I always think in terms of how much bawling and crying and grunting and hooting the right wing will do. And had they ruled the other way, the maggots would be screaming, they're doing the reparations. Because when you think about the fact that this country has prospered for its entire history, from the legacy benefits of stolen labor that probably reaches into the trillions of dollars.
Oh, yes.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was somewhat motivational, but I want to take a minute and go back to this business of the military and how they felt about all of this, because it turns out that 35 retired admirals and generals that included four former chairs of the Joint Chiefs of Staff actually filed an amicus brief on this case.
Yes.
And they said,
yes,
placing a diverse armed forces under the command of homogeneous leadership is a recipe for internal resentment, discord, and violence. By contrast, units that are diverse across all levels are more cohesive, collaborative, and effective. The importance of diverse leadership has risen to new heights in recent years as international conflicts and humanitarian crises require the military to perform civil functions that call for heightened cultural awareness and sensitivity to ethnic and religious issues. All service members, minority or otherwise, are better equipped to meet these challenges if they are educated in a racially diverse environment and guided by diverse leadership in the field. So naturally now some, like I said, some butthurt Brad and Melissa shithead have to sue the military academies. And they're not, and the, you know, the final analysis, they're not going to be happy, Darlene, until they have destroyed everything about this country. They want to go back go back to an America that, if it existed, was toxic and noxious and vile and vulgar. But we can't. But in trying to drag us back there, they're going to tear the country all to pieces. What is it, 70, 80% of the American people oppose what the court did in Dobbs? I wish I could say that the same response will obtain here, but I fear that it won't. Because this is still America.
Right, and it's still patriarchy involved too. I mean, this is, I think there's a lot of white guys out there that don't want to have to be on the hook for taking care of a kid if they, accidentally, quote unquote, knock up their girlfriend. You know? I mean, to them, it benefits them.
Right.
For abortion to be in place. So I kind of feel that, it is a little narcissistic, on the part of some men. I'm not saying all. There are plenty of men out there that care and know that this is wrong. That women's privacy rights, in a deleterious way have been stripped from us. But there are those that, it is very, it's for selfish, self-centered reasons. And the, I'm not sure how to qualify it, but the fact that it seems as though, well, the Supreme Court is not functioning and operating as, I think what we've been learning over these last several years, or many years, is that the Supreme Court is not functioning in a way that we idealistically thought that it would be, or that it should be. And it's not even idealistic. It's, how it should be functioning. You have, the dark money influences, the creepy billionaires, the tradition, you call it pattern and practice, of how these conservatively or Republican appointed justices are being cultivated straight out of the gates by dark money and by Leonard Leo. And the Federalist Society, even before they get on it, but also the moment they get on it, it seems like they have these junkets. Now, I use that term in the sense of, yes, there is a loss to the rest of us.
And you broke up.
Oh, rest of us are losing out. So I do kind of consider these junkets. The annual trip that Thomas was taking with the heart there, and now, Gorsuch and all of it, with his sale and now the real estate sales and things like that. But there's also this weird kind of negotiating going on. It seems as though it's embedded less in precedent, less in the laws, less in jurisprudence and more in, well, you know, if we're going to give this North Carolina thing and try to preserve some semblance of people's voting rights, we're taking away affirmative action. If we're going
because it's all a zero-sum game.
It's like it's sort of they're choosing the winners and losers in a way that is extremely, I say political, I guess. I don't know. It seems like they're supposed to rise above the politics, but they're not.
But they never do. They never have.
And it's and it's like, I think maybe because we're actually seeing how it's being revealed, how it's actually working, the actual mechanisms here. So like, you know, and KBJ, Sonia, Atlantic Cajun, they signed that damn letter that went to the Senate Judiciary Committee. What the fuck is going on there? You know, where Roberts was like, well, a Chief Justice has never been called before the Senate. They all signed that letter. So what was being held over their heads? What was it that Roberts said? If you sign this letter, maybe it was that. Maybe he said, if you sign this letter, we'll give you the North Carolina case.
And the Alabama case.
Yes, and the Alabama case. That's the only thing I can think of. And what is it that is stopping Ketanji Brown Jackson, Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan from just blowing this shit wide open and just coming out and saying it out loud? I mean, I don't know. I'm very worried about
the
machinations
The prestige and the majesty and the gravity of the Supreme Court is a powerful drug, Darlene. Wouldn't you imagine?
Yeah, but I would think that after this decision, it sounds like Ketanji Brown Jackson must be like, holy crap, you know, reality is hitting me full in the face here. Unless, you know, I had read somewhere that you won't get on to this court and you don't get in line for consideration for this court unless you are actively, or your people, or you're actively lobbying to be recognized. So that would have to go for Ketanji Brown Jackson and Sonia Sotomayor and others.
Well, do you remember, Darlene, do you remember the knock on KBJ? There were some people who got really angry because there was another shortlisted African-American woman who didn't go to Harvard. I can't remember her name, but I do remember. I do remember
Child?
That much of the fact pattern.
I just didn't really like her. Was Lindsey Graham?
Yeah, Lindsey Graham
wanted her.
Yeah, he threw a fit.
She was from his state. No.
Yeah, she was from South Carolina, and she was, and again, she was not from Harvard. So that from Harvard thing, you know, there's a level of institutional Ivy League bigotry. The only way you get on the Supreme Court, by God, is if you either Yale or Harvard or maybe Stanford, possibly UVA, maybe Michigan. I can hope. A girl can dream. This dissent today must have sent Fappy into an absolute frenzy. Remember the story of how after after his confirmation hearings, and he lied his ass off. His buddy went. Wasn't Leonard Leo, but his buddy went to visit him. Oh, it was John Danforth of Missouri. Went to visit him and found him huddled up in a fetal ball in the bedroom crying.
Oh, I remember you talking about that. Yeah.
It would suit me right down to the ground if every time Fappy wrote a single word, that Ketanji Brown Jackson was there just to slap him around. And because she, without using the exact word, she called him a token today. And she called, you know, she basically accused him of, and it's a term I will not use, but the black community uses it to describe a black man who is behaving too obsequiously toward people.
A UT.
Not even that. No. It starts with C. And it's a participle. But that, if she does that, if that becomes her little mission, just to bedevil that son of a bitch, that's fine by me. And we can give, let's see.
Oh, yeah.
Sonia Sotomayor is Puerto Rican. Alito's Italian. So Sonia can hammer on Alito. Although today she hammered on the waspiest wasp on the court. You know, old balls and strikes.
Yeah.
And tomorrow, I'm gonna wake up in the morning, just sit there and watch my telescreen until I see what happens in 123 Creative. If it comes down that they tell Karen from 123 Creative to go Cheney herself, that'll be the ultimate proof of the horse trading.
Yep.
And it should be the right outcome should be easy on this. It's not even a justiciable case, but they decided to take it. And now we find out that their prospective gay marriage website shopping nightmare client is a straight guy married to a straight woman with kids somewhere. That should actually trigger significant judicial that should trigger bar activity against the fraud merchants of the Alliance Defaming Freedom.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, even James Clapper had said in his book there, Facts and Fear, that the military is a much better military with diversity. And he was thinking specifically of the LGBTQ community participation in the military. He's highly supportive of that and said that he never, when he was in the lower ranks, and he had to, I guess that with the don't ask, don't tell, a pilot, a very good pilot, was outed as gay. So he had the dubious responsibility of firing this individual. And he said, we lost such a talent, and we lost a lot of very talented people, and also the diversity that they brought. They brought such
You broke up again.
Oh, that they brought a lot of important knowledge in terms of how to deal with other countries, you know, like, in terms of classified information and, you know, spying and everything. They were very valuable to the military. So when he gained, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Can you hear me okay? Oh, okay. When he began to climb in the ranks and became, you know, more powerful, he said, on himself to make up for that firing, in terms of promoting and hiring more people, LGBTQ, you know, who wanted to be in the military, to be sure that they were in, positions of authority and power in the military, and that it helped the military. So it's like, even, you know, whether you're talking about somebody with more melanin in their skin, or somebody from the LGBTQIA plus community, it really makes us better. The diversity makes us a better fighting force, makes us a better, nation overall. And when you have that diversity in the university level, it's a far more fascinating and interesting world to live in.
Yeah, that goes back to something that Steve said earlier. He said, I don't want to live in a colorblind society. I want to celebrate all the human differences that make up the good part of humanity. And I understand that. I mean, what a boring world of minuets and Virginia reels this would be if it was just homogeneous. To go back to the argument back in October on this case, the Solicitor General of the United States, Elizabeth Preligar, she said to the court, it is a critical national security imperative to attain diversity within the officer corps. And at present, it's not possible to achieve that diversity without race-conscious admissions, including at the nation's service academies. And at the time in the argument, Sammy Badbreath looked at her and said, yeah, we'll have to take that point very seriously. And then didn't. I mean, we're a better country for our diversity.
Absolutely.
I mean, look at Space Force, which Alabama fucked itself out of by going on an anti-trans frenzy. I hope. If the Space Force wants the best coders, the best programmers, and the best hackers, you better be LGBTQIA plus inclusive, because, oh my God, the number of trans girls who are coders and programmers and hackers, I mean, it's almost like a gag, a joke within the community that, you know, well, what do you do for a living? Well, you know, I'm in IT. Well, of course you are. All the trans girls are. And we're supposed to cripple ourselves. I'm sorry, bad word. We're supposed to walk with one foot in a bucket.
Because, well, yeah, if they want to maintain their white patriarchal supremacy.
Yeah, but you maintain that white male patriarchal supremacy is going to get its ass kicked on battlefields.
Oh, God, yes. They don't care about that. Oh, that won't happen. Look at, because they're simplistic. Their own survival means they have to look at it simplistically. That's why we get these asinine decisions.
And at one point in time, you know, the maggots were hollering about, you know, our military's too woke. Look how good Russia's doing in Ukraine. They're tough. They're men. They got bullets, not pronouns.
Right. And they're a fucking disaster. Alito, I think that's, I take a lot of pleasure in how he gets. He is, Sheldon Whitehouse had said, one during some speech he made that one of the thin-skinned justices got upset over something he had said or whatever. So I have to assume, I mean, if somebody was to say a thin-skinned justice, who would immediately think it, that he's referencing?
Oh, that's Alito.
Alito. It, to me, it's really easy to get under that asshole skin. So hopefully, like we say, stoke the stroke with you-know-who. I think it's easy to get him all riled up.
Oh, yeah.
And,
well,
and aggravated.
I remember so, when Barack Obama called him out in the State of the Union, and Alito was sitting there shaking his head, mouth in the
shaking
word, no,
head.
No.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Sheldon Whitehouse actually lives rent-free in Alito's head.
Oh, I think so, too. Which is great. Keep on doing it. Keep on living rent-free in that guy's head. And my business is picking back up, which is great. I just signed a contract with an old client that I had written for 13 years. And they're nationwide, nonprofit. And I wrote for their Connecticut programs for 13 years. And, the executive director, when she left, a new person came on and shit canned me, but said, you know, you're excellent at what you do. And, I would be happy to give you a reference. Anytime. So, you know, it's, gosh, the excellent way you do and still get shit canned, but he's going to give me a reference. Okay, great. But I didn't believe him. That's never happened. I didn't really even, once an agency cut me loose, I figured, well, we're done. And I brought in, my God, multi-millions for them over the course of the 13 years. Well, I did get contacted. He did refer me to another one of their offices. So I just signed the contract. They had the countersign and sent it to me. And I will have my very first consistent out-of-state client. I've been doing this for 24, 25 years when writing grants. And I will be, for the first time, in the minority. All of the staff, I'm an independent contractor, all the staff are Black and Asian. And I'm so excited. These are individuals who I'm intimidated. Because these are individuals who have these amazing CVs. They're just amazing. I mean, there was one gentleman who managed a massive, like, $35 million plus portfolio for New York City. I can't remember if it was public transportation or affordable housing. I can't recall. I'm just like blown away at just the brilliance of these individuals collected into this one agency that is basically new and has just made amazing progress in less than 5 years. This particular office has only been open for 5 years. And they are going gangbusters. And it's Charlotte, North Carolina, which is an amazingly diverse city with an African-American woman in there. They're doing incredible things. So I am, like, so excited. And as, you know, like Tracy likes to say, Darlene Whitaker from Connecticut. I feel like I've gotten into the big time. I am, like, so excited to learn about this thriving diversity and working with a diverse office.
I think you will be surprised to see just how refreshing it is. It's not to say that's not to say there isn't conflict or things like that, but there's definitely in a diverse workplace, there is a lot better, a lot different vibe.
Exactly. And I'm very excited, and I have a lot to learn from them, a lot to learn. So hopefully they will be patient with me. You know, white girl from Connecticut. So that's where that diversity just, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. And it makes life interesting and exciting and fun.
Uplifting.
So it's uplifting and...
Are you going to have to drive Wanda to work? Or is it virtual?
Well, it's all about North Carolina. So I don't think, I would love to visit somebody at some point. But that's, you know, it's remote. It's remote work at this point. But we'll be, you know, virtual meetings and things like that. So, and the first meeting I had when I was interviewing for it, it just looks. She had the windows open in the background. It was beautiful. Look, the view out by the window overlooking the city. It's like, oh my god, that's so cool. That's so cool, and it's a thriving city because they've got, you know, you know, an amazing mayor, and it's wow. So I'm excited for that.
I think you should be.
So it'll be a very new experience. Yeah, it'll be a very new experience, and it's an honor. And so, yeah. I just wanted to weigh in. I hope Scott is okay. I'm kind of worried about him, too. Haven't heard from him. So, Scott, if you're listening, I hope you're able to call in tomorrow. And then try to meet my, five to go. So just let me know when it's met.
Well, I'm so proud and happy for you.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's like I got another call. I got, you know, another somebody I worked with and wants to take me. So it's like the work is starting to blow up, and which is great. I'm telling everybody, look, I'm taking vacation a couple of weeks. I really want my vacation. And then go up in the office, so hopefully that'll boost, and I can dive in and head in for the peak, the fall for you. But right now, I want to soak up as many summer days as I can.
Yes.
Even though it's been kind of yucky, I'm seeing a haze. I'm wondering if it's the smoke, like it's kind of settled.
I would guess. I would guess that it is. Let me check and see what. See if our AQ.
Like foggy.
We've still got an alert, but it's not actually putting the number up. So apparently we've dropped. We're at 99.
Okay.
But I mean, shit. That's just any day that ends in Y downwind from a mountaintop removal site.
Exactly. Yes. Yep. And D.C. got a taste of it, you know. So those idiots,
breathe the MAGA deep, idiots, Marge. And,
yeah, you know, all you freaking denialists there, you know, it's coming home to roost. I mean, basically, what's happening in Texas and, you know, and my, the well-known meteorologist here in Connecticut confirmed it, because I heard this about a month ago, that these fires are, they're not, these fires can't go till.
Well, I have heard for the first time, and I'm not going to expand on it, but the first person has told me that, or not, oh God. These fires were deliberately set by terrorists to make us think climate change is real.
Yeah. God.
If you want to hang up and put the swirly straw in the Rock Gut tequila bottle, yeah, I'm right there with you.
Feel free. Again, they just twist and warp everything because they don't want anyone to, you know, they want everybody to sit there and be gaslit so much that they don't know what is reality. You know what I mean? And it's like, no. they wear you down, and you can't be worn down, and it can get exhausting. And there can be times like today where I'm like, oh, God, that's too much. I give up, but, you know, they've won, you know. And then there are other times where it just wells up in me. It's like, fuck that.
Well,
let's fight on.
That's kind of why, yeah. I mean, that's maybe it's a morbid curiosity on my part, but I'm decidedly curious to see how 123 Creative comes out tomorrow.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, if we're
if we're just
expecting them to be the theocratic assholes that they are, well, we know it's going to be another 6-3. But
yeah, but if there were two deals, backroom deals made. Mm-hmm.
And one of these days, somebody in that building is going to spill the tea.
Yes,
but it's gonna be somebody who doesn't give a shit about their highfalutin Ivy League law degree that was supposed to lead them down a path to glory. Because remember, everybody who's on that court probably or at least the majority clerked for somebody else. I mean,
yeah,
didn't the handmaid clerk for either Fat Dead Tony or Fappy?
Yes, I think. Oh, I don't know which one. I was going to say Fat Dead Tony, but it might have been. Well, he's the one that swore her in.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if it was him.
Brat clerked for that toxic right-wing asshole sexual abuser, pervert right-winger on the Ninth Circuit. You know, you have to be carefully taught. It's that song from South Pacific all over again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, like I said, there's this intellectual, incestuous thing going on. I didn't mean to gross anybody out.
Well, but there,
that's what
there went dinner in the Pacific Daylight Time Zone with your reboot of that comment, Darlene. Have a wonderful evening, my friend.
You beat me with the Trump Obama thing. That's even more close. But thank you. Yes, you have a wonderful
You're my daughter. You're my daughter. You're my daughter.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
Good night, Darlene. Bye. Just a couple of white girls sitting around rapping. And I'm sorry about the telephony. I'm kind of flummoxed. Not kind of, I am flummoxed. Bluetooth should not be that bad. I just wonder if maybe the Bluetooth is going south in the Rodecaster. I don't know. But anyway, thanks. Please, going forward with the overnight crew, if we could meet the last $75 of Darlene's Stockton Crush Challenge. Oh, Micah, you genius, you. That would be fantastic to come into tomorrow with only $1,699 to go to close the month of June. Be magnificent. Thanks to all of you who podcast or listen live. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your private, precious, finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Steve and Roger in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thanks, Brother Deacon Asa. I can never say enough how much you do to make this all work. And please, for Brother Deacon Asa's sake, because it makes him smile when he sees the algorithm smiling, follow the podcast. Tell your friends about the podcast. Tell them it's free. Everything here is free. There's no subscriber fees, nothing. This is all just voluntary. And you get some really great, you get some really good commentary and good group, you know, group processing and problem solving. And, you know, leave a comment. Like I said, leave a comment. Thanks, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Wear your masks while we're all, those of us who are all covered up in smoke. Wear your masks when you're around the maggots. Get your booster if you're eligible. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Carry some with you, pocket or purse. Or a European-style messenger bag. Maintain your social distance. And if some creepy old dude in a black robe comes towards you on the sidewalk talking about how racism is over in America and that he's colorblind, well, avoid that Chief Justice like the plague. Because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.